He pushed the jack into the slot labeled 1 and was surprised to hear a beep. The line was ringing. He was making a call. He pulled the jack out hurriedly, canceling the call, and saw that the light above 1 wasn't blinking. The light above 17 was. Bernard felt the room spin. A dead silo was calling him? A survivor? After all these years? With access to the servers? His hand trembled as he guided the jack into the slot. Lucas was asking something behind him, but Bernard couldn't hear anything through the headphones.
"Hello," he croaked. "Hello, is anyone there?"
"Hello," a voice said. Bernard adjusted his headphones. He waved for Lucas to shut the fuck up. His ears were still ringing, his nose bleeding into his mouth.
"Who is this?" he asked. "Can you hear me?"
"I hear you," the voice said. "Is this who I think it is?"
"Who the fuck is this?" Bernard sputtered. "How do you have access to..."
"You sent me out," the voice said. "Is this Bernard? You sent me to die." Bernard slumped down, his legs numb. The cord on the headphones uncoiled and nearly pulled the cups from his head. He clutched the phones and fought to place this voice. Lucas was holding him by the armpits, keeping him from collapsing to his back. "Are you there?" the voice asked. "Do you know who this is?"
"No,"
he said. But he knew. It was impossible, but he knew. "You sent me to die, you fuck."
"You knew the rules," Bernard cried, yelling at a ghost. "You knew."
"Shut up and listen, Bernard. Just shut the fuck up and listen to me very carefully." Bernard waited. He could taste the copper of his own blood in his mouth. "I'm coming for you. I'm coming home, and I'm coming to clean." The world is not thy friend, nor the world's law. Villain and he may be many miles asunder, and all these woes shall serve for sweet discourses in our time to come. He that is struck in blind cannot forget the precious treasure of his eyesight lost. One fire burns out another's burning. One pain is lessened by another's anguish. The tragic history of Romeus and Juliet. Wool, Part 5. The Stranded. 1. Silo 18. Mark stumbled down the great stairway, his hand sliding against the cool railing, a rifle tucked under his arm, his boots slipping in blood. He could barely hear the screams all around him, the wails from the wounded as they were half-dragged down the steps, the horrified cries from the curious crowds on every landing who witnessed their passage, or the shouts of promised violence from the men chasing him and the rest of his mechanics from level to level. The ringing in his ears drowned out most of the noise. It was the blast, the god-awful blast. Not the one that had peeled open the doors of IT. He had been ready for that one, had hunkered down with the rest. And it wasn't the second bomb, the one Knox had lobbed deep into the heart of their enemy's den. It was the last one, the one he didn't see coming, the one that spilled from the hands of that small gray woman from supply. McLean's bomb. It had gone off right in front of him, had taken his hearing as it took her life. And Knox, that stout and unmovable head of mechanical, his boss, his good friend, gone. Mark hurried down the steps, wounded and afraid. He was a long way from the safety of the down deep, and he desperately wanted to find his wife. He concentrated on this rather than the past, tried not to think of the explosion that had taken his friends, had wrecked their plans, had engulfed any chance at justice. Muffled shots rang out from above, followed by the piercing zing of bullets striking steel. Only steel, thank God. Mark stayed away from the outer railing, away from the aim of the shooters who hounded them from the landings above with their smoothly firing rifles. The good people of Mechanical and Supply had been running and fighting for over a dozen levels. Mark silently begged the men above to stop, to give them a chance to rest, but the boots and the bullets kept coming. Half a level later, he caught up to three members of Supply, the one in the middle wounded and being ported, arms draped over shoulders, blood dotting the backs of their yellow coveralls. He yelled at them to keep moving, couldn't hear his own voice, could just feel it in his chest. Some of the blood he was slipping in was his own. With his injured arm tight against his chest, his rifle cradled in the crook of his elbow, Mark kept his other hand on the railing to keep from tumbling headfirst down the steep stairwell. There were no allies behind him, none still alive. After the last shootout, he had sent the others ahead, had barely gotten away himself. And yet they kept coming, tireless. Mark would pause now and then, fumble with the unreliable ammunition, chamber a shot and fire wildly up the stairwell, just to do something, to slow them down. He stopped to take a breath, leaned out over the railing and swung his rifle toward the sky. The next round was a dud. The bullets buzzing back at him weren't. Huddling against the stairwell's central post, he took the time to reload. His rifle wasn't like theirs. One shot at a time, and difficult to aim. They had guns like he'd never heard of, shots coming as fast as a frightened pulse. He moved toward the railing and checked the landing below, could see curious faces through a cracked doorway, fingers curled around the edge of the steel jamb. This was it. Landing 42, the last place he'd seen his wife.
Shirley!
Calling her name, he staggered down a quarter turn until he was level with the landing. He kept close to the interior, out of sight from his pursuers, and searched the shadowed faces.
My wife!
He yelled across the landing, a hand cupped to his cheeks, forgetting that the incredible ringing was only in his ears, not theirs.
Where is she? Where is she?
A mouth moved in the dark crowd. The voice was a dull and distant drone. Someone else pointed down. The faces cringed, the cracked door twitched shut as another ricochet screamed out. The stairway shook with all the frightened boots below and the chasing ones above. Mark eyed the illicit power cables draped over the railing and remembered the farmers attempting to steal electricity from the level below. He hurried down the stairs, following the thick cords, desperate to find Shirley. One level down, positive that his wife would be inside, Mark braved the open space of the landing and rushed across. He threw himself against the doors. Shots rang out. Mark grabbed the handle and tugged, shouting her name to ears as deaf as his own. The door budged, was being held fast with the sinewy restraint of unseen arms. He slapped the glass window, leaving a pink palm print, and yelled for them to open up, to let him in. Eager bullets rattled by his feet. One of them left a scar down the face of the door. Crouching and covering his head, he scurried back to the stairwell. Mark forced himself to move downward. If Shirley was inside, she might be better off. She could strip herself of incriminating gear, blend in until things settled down. If she were below, he needed to hurry after her. Either way, down was the only direction. At the next landing, he caught up with the same three members of Supply. The wounded man was sitting on the decking, eyes wide. The other two were tending to him, blood on their sides from supporting his weight. One of the Supply workers was a woman Mark vaguely recognized from the march up. There was a cold fire in her eyes as Mark paused to see if they needed help.
"I can carry him,"
he shouted, kneeling by the wounded man. The woman said something. Mark shook his head and pointed to his ears. She repeated herself, lips moving in exaggeration, but Mark wasn't able to piece it together. She gave up and shoved at his arm, pushing him away. The wounded man clutched his stomach, a red stain ballooning out from his abdomen all the way to his crotch. His hands clasped something protruding there, a small wheel spinning on the end of a steel post, the leg of a chair. The woman pulled a bomb from her satchel, one of those pipes that promised so much violence. It was solemnly passed to the wounded man, who accepted it, his knuckles white, his hands trembling. The two members of supply pulled Mark away, furniture sprouting from his oozing stomach. The shouts sounded distant, but he knew they were nearby. They were practically in his ear. He found himself yanked backwards, transfixed by the vacant stare on the face of this doomed and wounded man. His eyes locked onto Mark's. The man held the bomb away from himself, fingers curled around that terrible cylinder of steel, a grim clench of teeth jutting along his jawline. Mark glanced up the stairwell where the boots were finally gaining on them, coming into view. Black and bloodless, this tireless and superior enemy. They came down the dripping trail Mark and the others had left behind, coming for them with their ammo that never failed. He stumbled down the stairwell backwards, half dragged by the others, one hand on the railing, eyes drifting to the swinging door opening behind the man they'd left behind. A young face appeared there, a curious boy rushing out to see. A tangle of adult hands scrambled to pull him back. Mark was hauled down the stairs, too far down the curving stairs to see what happened next. But his ears, as deadened as they were, caught the popping and zinging of gunfire, and then a blast, a roaring explosion that shook the great stairwell, that knocked him and the others down, slamming him against the railing. His rifle clattered toward the edge. Mark lunged for it. He grabbed it before it could escape and go tumbling into space. Shaking his head, stunned, he pushed himself up to his hands and knees and managed to rise slowly to his feet. Senseless, he staggered forward down the shuddering steps, the treads beneath his feet ringing and vibrating as the silo around them all continued its spiral into dark madness. 2. Silo 18. The first moment of true rest came hours later at supply, on the upper edge of the down deep. There was talk of holding there, of setting up some kind of barrier, but it wasn't clear how the entire stairway could be blocked to include the open space between the railing and the concrete cylinder beyond. This was the gap where the singing bullets lived, a place where jumpers were known to meet their ends, and where their enemy could surely find some way to scamper down. Mark's hearing had improved during the last leg of his run, enough to grow weary of the rhythmic clomp of his own boots, the sound of his pained grunts, the noise of his exhausted pants for air. He heard someone say that the last explosion had wrecked the stairway, had impeded the chase, but for how long, and what was the damage? No one knew. Tensions ran high on the landing. The news of McLean's death had unsettled the people of supply. The wounded in yellow coveralls were taken inside, but it was suggested, and not gently, that mechanicals injured would be better off receiving treatment further below, where they belonged. Mark waded through these arguments, the voices still somewhat muffled and distant. He asked everyone about Shirley, several in yellow shrugging as if they didn't know her. One guy said she'd already gone down with some of the other wounded. He said it a second time, louder, before Mark was sure he'd heard him. It was good news, and he figured as much. He was about to leave when his wife emerged without warning from the anxious crowd, startling him. Her eyes widened as she recognized him, and then her gaze fell to his wounded arm. "Oh, God!" She threw her arms around him, pressed her face against his neck. Mark hugged her with one arm, his rifle between them, the barrel cold against his quivering cheek. "Are you okay?" he asked. She latched to his neck, her forehead finding his shoulder, and said something he couldn't hear but could feel against his skin. She made room to inspect his arm.
"I can't hear," he told her.
"I'm fine," she said, louder. She shook her head, her eyes wide and wet. "I wasn't there. I wasn't there for any of it. Is it true about Knox? What happened? How bad was it?" She focused on his wound, and her hands felt good on his arm, strong and confident. The crowd was thinning as members of Mechanical retreated further down the stairwell. Several in Supply Yellow treated Mark to cold stares, eyeing his wound as if worried it would soon be their problem.
"Knox is dead," he told her. "McLean, too. A few others. I was right there when the blast went off."
He looked down at his arm, which she had exposed by tearing away his ripped and stained undershirt.
"Were you shot?" she asked.
He shook his head.
I don't know. It happened so fast."
He looked over his shoulder.
"Where's everyone going? Why aren't we holding up here?"
Shirley set her teeth and jerked her head at the door, which was too deep with yellow coveralls. "Don't think we're wanted," she said, her voice raised so he could hear. "I've got to clean this wound. I think some of the bomb is in you."
"I'm fine," he insisted. "I've just been looking for you. I've been worried sick."
He saw that his wife was crying, unbroken tear tracks standing out amid the beads of sweat.
I thought you were gone," she said.
He had to read her lips to make it out.
"I thought they had... that you were..."
She bit her lip and stared at him with uncharacteristic fear. Mark had never seen his wife fazed, not by a sprung casement leak, not by a cave-in deep in the mine that trapped several of their close friends, not even when Juliet was sent to cleaning. But heaps of dread were locked up in her expression now, and that scared him in a way the bombs and bullets couldn't.
"Let's hurry after the others,"
he said, taking her hand. He could feel the exposed nerves on the landing, the gazes begging them to be off. When shouts rang down from above once more and the members of Supply retreated to the safety of their doorway, Mark knew this brief moment of respite was over. But it was okay. He'd found his wife. She was unharmed. There was little anyone could do to him now. When they reached 139 together, Mark knew they'd made it. His legs had somehow held out. His blood loss hadn't stopped him. With his wife helping him along, they passed the last landing before Mechanical, and all he could think about was holding the line against those bastards who were taking shots at them from above. Inside Mechanical, they would have power, safety in numbers, the advantage of home turf. More importantly, they would be able to bandage wounds and get some rest. That's what he sorely needed. Rest. He nearly tripped and fell down the last few steps, his legs not used to an end to the descent, a flat piece of ground rather than one more tread to sink to. As his knees buckled and Shirley caught him, he finally noticed the jam of people at the security station leading into Mechanical. The crew that had stayed behind while the rest marched up to fight had been busy. Steel plates had been welded solid across the wide security entrance. The diamond-studded sheeting stood from floor to ceiling, wall to wall. Sparks hissed along one edge as someone worked to complete the job from the inside. The sudden flurry of refugees and wounded amassed in a crowd desperate to get in. Mechanics shoved and jostled against the barrier. They screamed and beat on the steel plates, mad with fear.
"What the hell?" Mark cried.
He followed Shirley as she pressed into the back of the crowd. At the front, someone was crawling on the floor, wiggling on their belly through the tightest of gaps, a rectangle left open below the security turnstile wide enough to slide through, easy enough to defend.
"Easy, wait your turn,"
someone ahead of them shouted. Yellow coveralls were mixed in with the others. Some were mechanics who had donned disguises. Some seemed to be from Supply, helping the wounded, mixed up in the wrong crowd or not trusting their own level for safety. As Mark attempted to usher Shirley toward the front, A shot rang out, the thwack and clatter of a hot ball of lead striking nearby. He changed directions and pulled her back toward the stairs. The crush around the impossibly small entrance grew frantic. There was a lot of yelling back and forth through the hole, people on this side shouting that they were being shot at, those on the other side yelling, "One at a time!" Several were on their bellies, scrambling for the tiny hole. One got his arm inside and was pulled through, sliding across the steel grating and disappearing into the dark space. Two others tried to be next, jostling for position. They were all exposed to the open stairwell above. Another shot rang out, and someone fell, clutching a shoulder and screaming, "I'm hit!" The throng dispersed. Several ran back to the stairs where the overhang of the treads protected them from the gunfire. The rest were in chaos, all trying to fit through a space expressly designed to allow no more than one at a time. Shirley screamed and squeezed Mark's arm as another person was shot. A mechanic fell to the ground and doubled over in pain. She yelled at her husband, asking them what they should do. Mark dropped his rucksack, kissed her cheek, and ran with his rifle back up the stairs. He tried to take them two at a time, but his legs were too sore. Another shot rang out, the ricochet of a miss. His body felt incredibly heavy, slow, like in a bad dream. He approached the landing of 139 with his gun level, but the shooters were further up, peppering the crowd from higher above. He checked that he had a fresh round in the home-built gun, cocked it, and edged out onto the landing. Several men in the silver of security were leaning out over the railing above, barrels trained down toward the ground floor of mechanical. One of the men tapped his neighbor and pointed toward Mark. Mark watched all this down the length of his own barrel. He fired a shot, and a black rifle tumbled toward him from above, the arms of its wielder slumping over the railing before sagging down and disappearing. Gunfire erupted, but he was already diving back toward the stairs. The shouting grew furious both above and below him. Mark went to the other side of the stairs, away from where he'd last been seen, and peered down. The crowd was thinning by the security barrier. More and more people were being pulled through. He could see Shirley looking up, shielding her eyes against the stairway lights above. Boots rang out behind him. Mark reloaded, turned, and aimed at the highest step he could see along the upward spiral. He waited for whatever was heading down toward him. When the first boot appeared, he steadied himself, allowed more of the man to sink before his barrel, and then he pulled the trigger. Another black rifle clattered against the steps and bounced through the railing. Another man sagged to his knees. Mark turned and ran. He lost his grip on his own gun, felt it bang against his shins as it skittered away from him, and he didn't stop to retrieve it. He slid down the steps, lost his footing, landed on his ass, and bounced back up. He tried taking the steps two at a time, was running as if in a dream, not fast enough, legs like rusted steel. There was a bang, a muffled roar behind him, and somehow someone had caught up, had punched him in the back, had hit him. Mark sprawled forward and bounced down the steps, his chin striking the steel treads. Blood was in his mouth. He tried to crawl, got his feet beneath him, and stumbled forward. Another roar, another punch to the back, the feeling that he'd been bit and kicked at the same time. "This is what it feels like to be shot," he thought, numbly. He spilled down the last few steps, lost sensation in his legs, crashed to the grating. The bottom floor was nearly empty. One person stood beside the tiny hole. Another was half in and half out, boots kicking. Mark saw that it was Shirley, on her belly, looking back at him. They were both lying on the floor. So comfortable on the floor. The steel was cool against his cheek. There were no more steps to run down, no bullets to load, nothing to shoot. Shirley was screaming, not as happy as he was to be lying there. One of her arms extended back out of that small black rectangle, reached for him past the rough cuts in the steel plates. Her body slid forward, pulled by some force beyond, pushed by this nice person in yellow, still standing by the strange wall of steel where the entrance to his home used to be. "Go," Mark told her, wishing she wouldn't scream. Blood flecked the floor before him, marking his words. "I love you." And as if by command, her feet slid into the darkness, her screams swallowed by that rectangular, shadowy maw. And the person in yellow turned. The nice man's eyes grew wide, his mouth fell open, and then his body jerked from the violence of gunfire. It was the last thing Mark saw, this man's deathly dance. And he only distantly felt, but for a tremble of time, the end of him that came next. 3 weeks later. Silo 18. Walker remained in his cot and listened to the sounds of distant violence. Shouts echoed down his hallway, emanating from the entrance to mechanical. The familiar patter of gunfire came next, the pop, pop, pop of the good guys, followed by the rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat of the bad. There was an incredible bang, the roar of blasting powder against steel, and the back-and-forth crackle ended for a moment. More shouting. Boots clumping down his hallway past his door. The boots were the constant beat to the music of this new world, music Walker could hear from his cot. He could hear everything from his cot, even with the blankets drawn over his head, even with his pillow on top, even as he begged, out loud, over and over, for it to please stop. The boots in the hallway carried with them more shouting. Walker curled up into a tight ball, knees against his chest, wondering what time it was, dreading that it was morning, time to get up. A brief respite of silence formed, that quiet of tending to the wounded, their groans too faint to penetrate his sealed door. Walker tried to fall asleep before the music was turned back up, but, as always, the quiet was worse. During the quiet, he grew anxious as he waited for the next patter to erupt. His impatience for sleep often frightened that very sleep away. And he would grow terrified that the resistance was finally over, that the bad guys had won and were coming for him. Someone banged on his door, a small and angry fist, unmistakable to his expert ears. 4 harsh knocks, and then she was gone. Shirley. She would have left his breakfast rations in the usual place and taken away last night's picked-over and mostly uneaten dinner. Walker grunted and rolled his old bones over to the other side. Boots clomped.